Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
How you guys doing? This is another episode of Moto IQ Radio. My name is Will. And hey, you know, this is a very, very special show. I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am for this particular episode. I've been following these guys, this company, for quite some time. They're doing something that I think is totally impressive, and I think it's perfect timing for what I believe our industry needs, and at least what America needs. And I think this is definitely something that can go worldwide. These guys have a great idea, and we're going to go deep into it today, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it, and I really invite you guys to check out what they're doing. Go to the website, local-motors.com, and see what these guys are doing. We have John Burton Rogers on the show, and we also have Alex Ficker on the show as well. These two guys, one is the CTO, that's John, and Alex Ficker, he's a, I guess you're the one of the head engineers over there, Alex?
I work with the engineering facet of the community, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. John, welcome to the show, boss. I really, really greatly appreciate you guys checking out the show and coming on.
Hey, Will, it's a pleasure to be here. Both Alex and I are really excited to talk to you on the show and tell you about what we're doing at Local Motors.
Yes, and I really hope that everybody appreciates what you guys are doing, and I know they will. I think the Moto IQ community will appreciate what you guys are working on, and especially something that we had talked about a little bit earlier. Once you drop that little bomb on us, I think everybody's going to really get excited about it. So why don't we start a little bit and talk about you, John, and let's talk about your background and sort of how you got this idea for Local Motors.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. So I think, you know, sort of the first piece of Local Motors that we want to tell everybody about is, if you haven't seen, Local Motors is here to democratize the cause of vehicle innovation. If it is a cool car, boat, plane, bike, motorcycle, train, truck, we have a community that is there to make it possible for you to dream big and to post your design ideas, post your fabrication ideas, post your engineering ideas, and to get feedback from people who are there. That's sort of what we stand for first and foremost. And we built a community. The center of the community is called The Forge at Local Motors, and that's what we're about.
And I think The Forge is definitely where a lot of sexiness happens. I'm not going to lie to you. There's so much awesome that's going on over there. But tell us about you. You know, how did you sort of find yourself where you are right now?
Well, so I think for me, I have always had a passion for automotive. And I've felt that there have been many, many ways that we could bring technology together. And I've always been frustrated by the pace of innovation where, you know, it's sort of left up to big car companies to decide what interesting and new technologies we see in vehicles.
Right.
And the cause of the individual modder has never been well championed by a group, an organization, if you will. It's always been small organizations that champion the cause of the individual modder. So I've always been passionate about that. And so I started my career modding cars myself. First car I ever modded was a Porsche 356A, and that was a new learning experience for me. Did a couple of Volvos, and then have had owned many different cars after that, and always been passionate about it. Trained myself early on in university as an engineer, and really felt like people discredited car modders in the engineering community, and in at least the higher education community in the United States. And I wasn't happy about that. And so I basically found that, you know, my calling for a long time I thought was going to be someplace else. So I joined the military. I was a Marine for 6.5 years, served in Iraq, and it was sort of around the end of that time that I decided that, you know what, I had gotten it wrong, and that actually my chosen calling was cars, and that even if the engineering community sort of looked down its nose at people who wanted to mod cars, that wasn't sort of the pinnacle of being an engineer, that really that was where it was at, and it was where my passion was at, and I felt that we really needed to do something in this world to develop cars faster, and that we were going to build the company that was going to create the place for that to happen.
Right.
So, that's kind of a little bit of a background of how we got to the point where we started Local Motors and my background about where I got there. And once I saw the vision of where we wanted to go forward of creating a home for people who had innovative vehicle ideas and a place to see that stuff get put to rights and made real, that's when we got started on Local Motors.
I think that's one of the things that I really like about you is the fact that you took that little bit of adversity. I think maybe it stoked a little bit of a flame in you, and I think coming back to it after doing your time overseas, and you know, I'm sure a lot of the listeners will say they thank you for that, and I do. You know, Local Motors is such a fascinating idea. And the fact that you've taken it to where it is right now, I'm sure you've got a solid team around you that has helped this thing come to fruition. Who's worked alongside you making this thing happen?
Great question. We have a fantastic team. And, you know, I'd like to say that before we even, you know, I answer the question about the team, Will, but before you even get to the team that built it, it is also the team that sort of inspired me to get going. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, what was really fascinating to me is that there are so many wonderful people out there that serve overseas that are very Akamai. They can get things done. And mm-hmm. And to me, it was kind of, you know, the inspiration to get going, almost the team before the team, were the people that said, you know, you can do anything. And if the worst thing is getting shot at, could it be worse than that? And probably not. So give it your all and do something amazing and make us proud.
Wow.
And so that really gave me the feeling that I should do this. I mean, it's silly. You know, we all live in some ways in fear of the unknown and in fear of the things that we might fail at. And I think that being in the military, that team taught me that you should not fear those things. That should be your impetus to getting things done right. And so for me, that team is almost as important in the story of Local Motors as the team that we have now, because they gave me the courage to feel like we should go out and we should do this. And I thank them for that. And I think that, you know, what the lesson that I learned from that for everyone else is, do not fear failure. Failure is what makes you do grand things. And yes, you may, God forbid, fail. But the point is that if you have a great idea, some project you want to work on, something that you think could be amazing, don't take no for an answer, because that's where the most amazing things have actually come from. So that's the team that I started with. And then the team that I grew into was the team after I proclaimed that, you know, this is what I believed in and I was going to pour my heart and soul into it. It was amazing, the people that we met, started this community of basically designers, engineers, and enthusiasts and fabricators, and said, we're going to build a vehicle first, the first crowdsourced vehicle. And when they came together, that's what this were. We found people in 122 countries in the world, and we started the company in Massachusetts. We moved it to Phoenix eventually to build the first crowdsourced car, and so we've picked up people along the way. We have folks in the team that are from Massachusetts, folks that are from France, folks that are from Switzerland, folks that are from California, Arizona. We just have a great group of folks that work at Local Motors. And then, of course, we consider part of our team to be the community of people that have given, you know, their heart and soul to great ideas that they want to push forward on our website. And those are from the 120 countries that I mentioned all over the world.
Wow. Wow. Alex, what's your background and how did you link up with Local Motors?
Well, I actually I started pretty grassroots, like everybody else in the automotive industry, messing around with you know, motorcycles and such as soon as I could, and then switching into cars and that sort of thing. And then went to college, took some engineering courses and thought it was pretty cool. When I got out, I worked in a couple of shops that did a combination of automotive customizations and racing series, and then I switched over into aerospace for a little while because I was getting a little bit frustrated with the shop scene, and
right.
then the recession hit, and I did lighting for a brief stint, and that was a little bit weird. But I found myself out in Phoenix, and just through sort of chance circumstance, landed on locomotives and knew that when I heard what they were doing, I knew I had to engage. So signed on with them in 2010, and it started out as just a trainer position, and then as we progressed and started expanding our community to be more than just necessarily industrial design, it seemed like a pretty good fit for me to get involved and start interacting with all the new people that wanted to come in on the engineering side of things or the fabrication side of things, and really sort of represent them in our team. So,
awesome. Let's talk about the community. That word has popped up frequently so far, and
yeah.
Only like 15 minutes, less than 15 minutes in. John, can you tell us about the community that surrounds locomotives? And you said they're in 120 different countries, so I'm sure it's deep and wide.
Absolutely. Yep. Sorry, I thought you were continuing on there for a moment.
No, I'm sorry.
And so, yes, it is deep and wide. And I think that so our community is, how we define it. A lot of people say, well, my community is the people that live on my street. You know, community is a very overplayed word right now. And especially, you know, the Facebook community online, you've got, you know, your community in your neighborhood. And the way we look at our community is very much to call it the spade a spade. Your community are the people that, you know, are not necessarily just your friends, but you share passions together,
right.
Some passion. And our community is very much a physical community, and it's very much a virtual community. So virtually, they're the people that come online that are passionate about vehicle innovation. And locally, they're people that are passionate about vehicle innovation, and they find us in Phoenix or wherever we take our car. So the first car we designed is the Rally Fighter, and our customers, I just had a guy this evening, who just sent me a picture of one of our cars in Boston, and he said, I don't know if this is you or this is one of the customers, but this thing is awesome. And he's a member of our community. He's not necessarily somebody that's online, but he knows our car, and he takes the time to take a picture and either post it on Facebook or send it to one of us because he's so enthusiastic about the revolution that a crowdsourced car could create. And
right.
So I think that our community, first and foremost, of course, are the people that join online, register, and contribute to ideas. You can be an enthusiast. You can vote. You can be a designer. You can post and get feedback. You can be an engineer. You can be a fabricator. You can be a modder. You can come in and you take pictures of what you do and share them. It's amazing what people think of, and it's amazing what people love to see, and have the feedback that they can give you is just really exciting when you're looking for a like-minded community. And so I think that basically for us, that's the sort of simple way to think about being in our community. But if you're in Phoenix, we have these events called Makers, Modders, and Masters at the Microfactory. And the second Tuesday of every month, people come together. We just had one last night. And basically, we had 100 people turn out. They all want to see what happens at the Microfactory. Those people are in our community. And then, like I said, they're the folks that have read about us. They follow us. They're either on our @LocalMotors Twitter stream, or they're on our Facebook Rally Fighter account, Locomotives Rally Fighter account, or our Locomotives account, and these are the ways that you connect to us and you become part of our enthusiast community. So that's kind of the best way I could define our community right now, today.
100%. I've poked around there quite frequently, and, you know, there's just so much to read, and, you know, I always feel a little wary about, you know, putting my 2 cents in. I try to look and see, oh, you know, I think they said what I said, and or they would say what I was thinking, and so I definitely find myself lurking a lot, but I'm very interested in a lot of the projects you guys have going on, and I'm definitely going to dip into those in a minute here. But let's talk about the process, especially for the Rally Fighter. What was the process that created Rally Fighter? And I know that crowdsourcing was a very important part of that and was crucial to the development of the vehicle. But can you tell us what is crowdsourcing and sort of how that worked into the process of creating the Rally Fighter?
Great. Well, we do not actually, if you allow me, I don't really love the phrase crowdsourcing when we define what we do. We like to talk about co-creation.
Okay.
And the main reason why is because crowdsourcing was sort of the first evolution of saying, let's go out to a crowd of people and let's get information. But the truth is that a crowd is not the same thing as a community. A crowd can be a mob. It can be your community, or it can be somebody else. Similarly, sourcing from them is exactly, you know, sort of what we don't want to say, where you'd say, all your ideas are the ones we use, and we don't even come up with any of our own. And that's not true. I mean, we wouldn't have a rally fighter if it was just our community that had designed it, because it takes a team to make it happen.
Right.
So we call it co-creation for that reason, because it's respectful of the process. And so basically what it means is it's a online and real-time physical collaboration of people who are interested in a project, and effectively we moderate that. So we make sure that the end goal is we're going to come out with a working car that can be driven on the streets of America or around the world. And the process of co-creation is taking it through a metered process to say, let's see what the outside of the car is going to look like, how the car is going to package, what it's going to look like on the interior, how the engineered pieces are going to fit into the vehicle. Then we build some prototypes, we test them out, and we go from there. That's co-creation.
Wow. Yes, 100%. I do like that word. I totally agree with you. That word is a little bit is better than crowdsourcing. The crowdsourcing is a little bit more. I think it's more like I've heard it used when trying to decide on a logo. And you just sort of put it out there and let people vote on it. I guess that would be crowdsourcing. But this is co-creation. I think is definitely more intensive, more hands-on, more ownership, if you will.
Well, it's a give-and-take situation, you know? Like, the crowdsourcing, you sort of feel as if you're stripping something off of the crowd that you're tapping, and really, you know, the type of interaction that we're looking for is as I said, much more of a give-and-take. You know, it's not us trying to get somewhere. It's more us trying to create a forum where, you know, the crowd, I suppose, can get closer to where their goals lie, you know, where they want to go with it. So
right. I agree 100%. So how long did it take from drawing to production for the Rally Fighter?
The Rally Fighter from first idea on a piece of paper to first article was about 18 months.
Wow.
That's a pretty amazing amount of time, and, you know, I think just really short. And also, when we started, we had only about 6,000 people in our community, and I think that a lot of them, rightfully, because of all of the bad things that have happened in the automotive industry, said there's no way this is going to be real. And we're really proud that it became real. And then I think one thing that I didn't say about co-creation, but Alex would definitely back me up on this, is that it never stops.
Yeah.
It's not just so you can put a product out. That's just where it starts. And the very notion that you even would define, one of the notions we don't like is this notion of, I have a 2011 car, I have a 2012 car. When you rip the insides out of your Nissan Z and you turn it into like an awesome drifting machine, you don't say that I've got a 2011 Nissan. It's just not, that's not part of what it is. It is what you made it become. And so
right.
I like the idea of co-creation never stops, because it's a 2012.1, 0.2, 0.2.2, 0.2.2.3.
Right.
Putting all the different mods in to be able to make it there, and it changes the game. Co-creation is forever, and you're starting a trunk that people can branch off on in many different ways, or create their own major branches, and that's sort of the magic of co-creation.
I agree. Alex, do you have anything to add?
That pretty much says it. I mean, with the Rally Fighter, we were even, we were already months into production and whatnot, and we were still looking at, I mean, that was just the thing, is after putting the thing into production, we were taking it out, taking out the actual production cars onto the trail finally, and, that sort of in-situation interaction spurred on, you know, new development efforts that we did with the community, and solutions that were inspired by the community to solve problems just literally as they came up. You know, every production car, everybody's always sort of like, oh, you know, don't get the first model year, it's chock full of issues and this type of thing. But again, if we sort of, put down the idea of model years, this car is just constantly open for iteration and improvement. And it's open for iteration and improvement by the users, and our job is really just to, again, give them the forum where they can communicate it directly to the people that can take action on it, you know?
I agree 100%. I think that this is definitely an aspect that allows for you guys to be extremely nimble when it comes to changes or upgrades or modifications or new information and everything else. This co-collaboration, co-creation aspect definitely allows you guys to be extremely nimble, would you say, John?
Oh, there's no question about it. And, you know, if you go back to what the inspiration was and why we started this, the idea was to be nimble. The idea was to be able to get people's ideas. You know, we should not be frustrated when somebody says, hey, I dream of a flying car. We shouldn't be looking at them and saying that's a bad idea. You know, what about the guys at Google that said we're going to do an autonomous driving car, something that drives around the streets with nobody in it? I mean, to one man's crazy idea is another man's genius. And I think that we should be building a community of people, especially in the United States now, where people are second-guessing, like, can we do manufacturing anymore? Hogwash. We could totally do manufacturing here if we stop beating each other down. And maybe we can do some of the most innovative manufacturing in the world because we let people think freely about what ideas are great. So nimbleness is key.
Absolutely, absolutely. Can you tell us about the Rally Fighter, its specs, all the cool, awesome bits that thing has?
Yeah, maybe I can turn that one over to Alex, just because this is like candy for us to be able to answer this question. And so, maybe I'll throw the chocolate bar in his direction for a little bit and fill in. I'd just love for him to be able to explain it. I started the company, but he was a community member first, and I just think it's fun to hear people from the outside talk about what we did there.
Go for it.
Yeah, so basically the Rally Fighter, again, we built, you know, our thing is niche vehicles, and we built the Rally Fighter for the American Southwest. So the obvious iteration there was that we were going to build it for essentially Baja and that type of scenario. So we went with the 6.2-liter LS3 as the power plant there, using the GM aftermarket performance package using the LS3. And we went with a 4L85E automatic transmission because we realized we went out there and talked to people and found out that for high-speed Baja, if you started going with a manual transmission, you were going to end up with a lot of burnt clutches. So automatic was the natural choice there. We got about 18 inches of travel in the front and 20 in the rear, though I think for the coming production models, we're going to have an option where you can go even greater than that. This thing has two ride heights, so you can bump it down to a street setting that makes it that lowers the CG so that you can actually have a little bit more performance on the street. But honestly, we've definitely wasted a number of tires in our test track in the back just staying flat, and it's hugely entertaining. And the other thing about it is that since we were going at this with the idea that this car was going to be, you know, it is and was intended to be 50 State Street legal, so making sure that it could handle respectably on the road instead of what you see the trophy trucks doing when they, you know, get out of the desert in Baja, we had to make sure that the roll was restricted, so we have any roll front and rear, and we really did take some time with the suspension to make it so that it was a nice blend between off-road performance and then actual feeling of control when you go on-road as well. So, me personally, like, I get just as much a kick out of going and doing four-wheel drifts in the parking lot as much as I do taking it out into canyon runs and things like that. So that's really the deal with it. It's a 2+2 configuration. It has AC, audio, power windows, luggage space. It's really sort of you can have just as much comfort going around and driving and doing errands and whatnot as you can if you go and take it off road. So
maybe I'd throw in there that I have a bunch of boys, and my wife and I piled three boys in the back this summer, and we drove from Phoenix to Maine and back. It was 7,000 miles in the Rally Fighter, and epic. And we did it in August in the middle of the heat of Phoenix, and we went through the South Way, so it was hot, And with air conditioning going, we just had a blast. My wife knitted a stocking in the front seat, and the boys played and watched video games in the back, and we got stopped at every single road crossing all across America with people saying, "What in the heck is that thing? It is awesome." And I think the only negativity that came from my boys the whole time was my five-year-old in the back when we got stopped at a McDonald's and he was hungry and somebody said, "Can I just stop you all and ask what that is?" And he was like, "It's called It's None of Your Business. I'm hungry."
Getting anywhere in that car is really difficult. It usually takes about 4.5 hours Phoenix to L.A., but if you've got to stop at any of the gas stations, it can easily tack on another 2 hours to your trip just from talking.
That's awesome. You know, I think that goes for anybody riding, driving, boating, anything. Because when you get those questions, you know, you just have to be stopped, filling up, and people just flock over. That says volumes about what you guys have created. I mean, anybody that's modded a Mustang, a Camaro, a 240, when people respect your work, that's validation. You know, that says you've done something well.
I mean, this is why we have, you know, you French it, you murder it, you drop it, you cut it, you slice it, all of those things. You're performing artistry on a car, and it has been too long for us not to respect everything that goes into modding a car. It's artistry, it's science, it's engineering, it's fabrication. And I think the greatest thing that all of us who have done that for what we love the most is when people look at it and say, "Hey, that's awesome." And maybe the second greatest thing is when somebody looks at it and they go, "Huh?" And you get a chance to tell them, look at what I did. I don't know. It's the notice. It's when people care, and they think, "Wow, that's wild."
Yeah, I think I feel the same way. I think the factor is sort of inquisitive, and you start really poring over the details. I think I checked out Icon built that Wicked Bronco truck. Very, very custom.
Yeah.
I saw that SEMA, and you know, at first I was like, "Oh, this is like one of my favorite trucks." And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, "Huh." You look at it some more, you're like, "Okay. I see what you did there. Okay. I feel the same way about this truck." You know, the Rally Fighter is one of those things. When I first saw it, I was like, "Well, I'm not really an off-road guy." But then I started learning more, and I was like, "Oh, that's dope. I really dig that. I like that piece right there. Oh, it's got air conditioning, too. That's awesome." You know, there's so many cool bits about this thing. And also, there's so many cool potential bits, which leads me to my next question, which is the open source aspect of the Rally Fighter. And I guess, overall, any of the projects you guys are going to be going for in the future, the open source aspect, I mean, how important is that for what you guys are doing over there, John?
So, I mean, look, critical, because when we started, not only did everybody tell me this will never happen, but the one thing that they said is no one will share their hard-earned ideas. Because it's how they get jobs, by having great ideas that they don't share and then they share in their portfolio. It's how they get recognized when they go to award shows, because they don't share. And so there was this kind of old school, like, it's my idea and you can't see it until I show it to you. But then I'm showing it to you anyway. And then, so that was kind of one attitude. But then when you go to a car, like Cars and Coffee, or you go to like a shop where people are getting together, or you go to like a regular, you know, club where people mod and get together, they're not sharing. They're telling you exactly what they did. That's the whole point of a car show. And so why would you not have a more open and large open source car show, if you will, all the time, or bike show, or motorcycle show? And so I think that the point was is that's BS that people don't share. Of course they do. And so, if you have a patentable idea, then I do not recommend putting it on the internet if you intend to patent it, because ipso facto, you are not going to be able to patent it anymore. But other than that, for 99% of the other innovation that goes on, which is super cool stuff that you made that you want to show people, then you definitely need an open source place to show it. And so I think one thing that I'd emphasize here for those people that aren't that big on the law, there have been a lot of smart cats over at Harvard University at a place called the Berkman Center, which developed this construct called Creative Commons. And Creative Commons is awesome because what it did is it did for people who do stuff that's kind of not patentable but super cool. And I would call those designers, whether they're fabrication designers, engineering designers, or industrial designers. Mm-hmm. And effectively what Creative Commons did is it said enough already of people putting their hard work into designs and not being able to kind of claim that it is theirs. And so Creative Commons basically said, I'm going to create a license where I, as a user who generates this content in a community, I'm going to put a license that I selected on my work, Creative Commons.
I agree.
You can choose that it can be attributed to you. You could say you don't have to attribute it to me. You can choose that it can be used for commercial uses by the people who use it, or you can say you can't use it for commercial purposes.
Yep.
You can say that you have to share it alike or you don't have to share it alike. And so you get to select it as the author, which basically is grassroots of the way we always wish intellectual property protection could be. And so open source with Creative Commons allows you basically to say, yeah, it's my work. As long as you tell people that it's my work, yeah, go ahead and use it. And that means that you are freely giving to the creative space cool ideas that other people can feel confident about using. And this is not rocket science. This is not stuff that's brand new. If you've ever used little tiny sites of things like Flickr or things like iStock Photo or other things like that, these are sites that live on Creative Commons so that artists, photographers can post their stuff up. So we're pretty stoked about what open source means and the protections that have been created in the last several years to allow people to feel safe about posting their stuff up.
Yeah, 100%. And Creative Commons is actually quite popular, at least on a couple of the podcasts that I listen to. They say, you're more than free to, they'll say this is Creative Commons 3.0, which is a particular Creative Commons license, which basically says anybody can use this as long as it's not commercial. And Creative Commons, I think, is one of those brilliant ideas that it's right on time. I think when creating in a community, I think some people might be a little bit hesitant to put an idea out there because, maybe they feel like it's monetizable, and so they keep it in their head, and next thing you know, somebody has parallel thinking happens, and somebody else comes up with the idea and puts it out there, and of course you have no claims to it because you didn't put it out there. So creating open source, I think with the Rally Fighter, and I think with what Local Motors is all about, I think it allows for the business of small business to look at what you guys created. If somebody wants to create some beefier upper A arms or something in particular, that a guy in his garage with that fabrication skills could look at those specs, make them, and sell them into the community. Is that correct?
That's correct. You got it right. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Awesome. To me, that is the future. What you guys have created is the future. I've been standing on my soapbox forever and a day saying, why aren't we creating more specific cars, more cool cars, more cool bikes? Why are we sort of stuck in this thing where, we just can't get past, the cars that are already out there, when there are tons and tons of incredibly intelligent people out there who collaborating with a designer, with a community of people, what you guys have at the Forge, to create some very awesome cars? Right now, I'm not going to lie to you, I've been running it over my head, a new cab for cities around new cabs. I mean, the London cab, the British cab, that's made by one company. And they just break those bad boys out. Those are the only cabs you're going to see. Why aren't we streamlining that process towards a diesel engine that runs on waste vegetable oil that we're burning in the cities anyway, and just crank these bad boys out? Get away from the Crown Vic. It sucks way too much gas. Let's go diesel.
Yeah,
how do you
totally. I mean, it's like, and you can see it too, that it's not just, you know, you got, it's funny you mentioned the Crown Vic or something like that. I mean, they're dealing with the same thing about, you know, not just cabs, you got, you know, service cars too. I mean, you know, you have all of these, the special purpose vehicle market is like just one facet of it, but it's a great example because you think about it and you, why would you take, you know, a situation like a squad car or something like that, where you've got all that gear, you know, you have all the hardware in the front, then you have to have some kind of a separator in the back, and it's got to be strong enough. And by the time you finish the separator, there's practically no room in any kind of a standard produced factory car to fit anybody back there. You know,
exactly.
It's all this. The special purpose vehicles or the conversion, what is the conversion vehicle market is like, it's like they've been just submitting to suffer for years, taking sort of whatever was thrown down the OEM chain and making, you know, purposing it as best they could, you know, to their needs. And now, you know, we got this opportunity essentially to make an avenue where, you know, yeah, certainly companies, for example, could reach out to people in the services and say, you know, what do you need, and then we'll try and accommodate. But this is a way for those people to get intimately and continuously involved in the development process from start to finish for the products that they will end up using. You know what I mean? The
exactly.
XT2V, the flip mode that we did for DARPA is another example of that. Just the idea that, you know, again, this isn't just a big OEM coming, having a focus group and saying, so tell us what you need, guys. And then a bunch of, you know, designers, very skilled ones, say, from L.A., for example, sit and try and interpret, you know, essentially, you know, the needs and requirements as given by these real case users. It's these real case users get to go right to the people who are doing the drawings, speccing out the systems, you know, engineering the envelopes and this type of thing, and engineering the frameworks, and they get to have real live input with these people to help bring them into their world so that they can be more, they can ply their trade more effectively. And it's just it's a really effective, you know, joining of knowledge and ability between solution seekers and solution providers, you know.
100%. Man, we have so much I want to talk about. Let's talk about the local forge, or the micro factory. What tools are available for somebody to come in and build their own rally fire? How does that process go?
So the forge works is, the forge is a place for you to come in, whether you're designer, engineer, CAD artist, engineer, or fabricator, and post your projects. And so specifically right now, we've got lots of threads. We call them all projects. And and so you can look at the Rally Fighter project, and you can come in, and you can say, you know, I'd like to, the car in that stage, you know, is a fully functioning vehicle that is out. And so you could post your ideas as a project of what you're going to do to mod your Rally Fighter, and that would be one way to do it. If you're one of our Rally Fighter customers, we have Rally Fighter customers that maintain their own thread on their car, and they tell people what they're doing. We've had people that have put in air horns on Rally Fighters, or put in, you know, infrared light bars on Rally Fighters, or put incredible roof racks or other kinds of systems where they're doing it. We've got one guy that's supercharging his, another guy that wants a four-wheel drive Rally Fighter. And so there are lots of projects. And, you know, the thing I think I would emphasize here about the Forge, kind of a perfect way to answer this, is the Forge does not exist for the Rally Fighter. The Rally Fighter came from the Forge.
Okay.
But the point is that it is around for any project that anybody wants to work on.
Okay.
You know, we can take this piece by piece in terms of things we're talking about, but if you think about it, the concept is so much bigger than the Rally Fighter itself. The Rally Fighter was born at the Forge and proved that a open-source, co-created car is possible. But then if that's possible, what about a tranny that you're working on? What about an upright? What about a spindle? What about arms? What about an outdrive for a boat? What about a new drag package for a motorcycle? What about a conversion to make your bike an electric bike? What about this fairing, that fairing, this graphic work, this wrap, that kind of thing? It's endless when you have a community of passionate vehicle folks, and to be able to tag it, search it, go to the places where you find people that are interested in the things like you are interested in, that's what this open garage is about.
Very, very awesome. Very, very true. And everybody get over there, please. Get over there and join. I expect there's 8,000 people that like MotoIQ on Facebook. I expect 8,000 people to go over and check out Local Motors, local-motors.com, and get involved over there. So when somebody's purchasing a rally fighter, how does that process work? And I understand that there are opportunities to be really, really involved and not so heavily involved in the build process of the rally fighter.
So, I mean, this is the dream come true scenario. So if you're sitting on top of, if you're sitting on top of $74,000, $74,900 to be precise, or if you get a loan to be able to do it, and making cars is your passion, you are going to drive the most incredible car in America, and you're going to have the most incredible experience before you do it. So it's a car that you put a deposit down on, you reserve your number, you set a date, and then you and a friend come to our factory in Phoenix, our micro factory, and you build your car on the floor right there, and you drive away with the car when you're done. That's what this experience is all about. It's a program. It's set up. You start with basically all of the parts of the rally fighter right there in front of you, and you put them together into your car. And the goal there, to make it really simple, is when you pull up at a stoplight and you've got a Ferrari 456 next to you, or a 355 F1 or whatever it is, and they roll their window down and they say to you, "What is that? That is amazing. Where did you buy it?" You say, "I didn't. I built it."
That is awesome. That is something that I am just, you have no idea. I can't wait to build something of my own. I don't have 74K, but I don't know. Maybe I can convince some other people on the Forge to co-create something with me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the key. Like, it doesn't need to be the rally fighter, you know?
Right, and go to Facebook right now. Our Facebook fans that are out there, just the other day, they started a raffle and basically said, you know, we got to have a rally fighter for the common man. How about we sell tickets for $20, and the person who wins gets a rally fighter? And so,
okay,
you know, it doesn't just have to be, it does not just have to be another vehicle, or dreaming about having a rally fighter someday when you can have that kind of money to do it. You know, I think that this notion of co-creation and this notion of sort of everybody coming together to be able to make these dreams come true on our Local Motors Rally Fighter page, that Local Motors Rally Fighter page has found, you know, now going on 7,000 members that really are passionate about this vehicle and want to know where it goes, and they decided that they were just going to find a way. 3,750 people with $20 tickets will gain some lucky sucker a Rally Fighter. That's a pretty exciting thing.
Okay, I'm going to go do that right now. Well, maybe I'm not eligible since I did the interview. I don't know. You tell me. But anyway, how long does it take to build the Rally Fighter?
Rally Fighter can be built in 2 weeks. And so basically you come for two long weekends, because we know people have jobs and that kind of thing. And so we bring you for the most exciting periods. You really Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And you come in and you work on the vehicle. And you start with your bare chassis, which is just a space frame. And you put on all of the running gear for the vehicle. You turn into a rolling go-kart. You put in the floor tubs. You put in the drive shaft. You put in the wire harness. You connect it to everything. You put in the engine. You dress the engine. You crank it over for the first time it's ever been cranked over. You go through the learning procedures. You understand the OBD2 protocols. You put the body on the vehicle. You put the seats in. You build the car.
You can also select your own vinyl skin, right?
Yeah, that is really one of the cool things. We really wanted to make a statement here and say, okay, painting a car is a very difficult thing to do, and so how can we make it such that you can customize this thing to, you know, all get out, but you can also do it quickly within the process of a two-week build and repeatedly, and also make a really good statement for the environment and say, let's get the paint process out of this and still have amazing looking cars. And so we went with the vinyl wrap process for these vehicles. It's something that the super speedway cars at NASCAR do and a bunch of other examples that we've seen. What I laugh about is in the major, you know, car industry where you get people that wrap cars, especially OEMs, you know, they paint the car first and then they wrap it. It's like a belt and suspenders. And we sort of we kind of feel like, you know, why not have these amazing...
I'm sorry, dude. That was brilliant. I'm sorry. That's perfect. That's perfect. Belt and suspenders.
I
love it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some farmers need a belt and suspenders, and, you know, maybe someday, you know, having a belt and suspenders will keep you up. But in paint versus vinyl wrap, we don't think that it's necessary. So, yeah. That's what we allow, and you customize these things, and that brings out another part of our community, which is people who are interested in graphic wraps. Right now we're running an awesome competition. It's for the folks at the Industrial Manufacturing and Trade Show, IMTS, and they've put out a prize where basically people can compete to design the rally fighter that they're going to show off there. It's $1,050 in prize money, and basically if you're a good graphic artist, you should come in and design the rally fighter for the IMTS show.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that sort of brings me sort of into my next question. You told me that there's quite a few projects that are going on in the Forge right now. Can you sort of tell us some of the ones that you guys are going on, especially the Shell Challenge? What's that all about?
Sure. So the Shell Challenge is put on by Royal Dutch Shell Corporation, and a division of theirs called the Game Changer Division. And the Game Changer Division wanted to see whether the local motors community could come together and design 5 future fuel vehicles that would work each in a different city around the world. So they highlighted Basra, Iraq, and Bangalore, India, and Amsterdam in the Netherlands, and Houston, Texas, and Sao Paulo, Brazil. And basically what they wanted to say is take a look at the local feedstocks, the local materials, the local terrain, the local weather, and design a future mobility construct that would transform how you would get around in those areas. So it didn't have to be a car. It could be a bike, it could be pedal power, it could be electric, it could be solar power, it could be any of these things. And the point was that they wanted to show that you can really be a cause for change using this local motors platform to be able to design things. And this competition is going on right now. You should come in. It's all the entries are in. There are 170 entries, world-class entries from all over the world. And you can come in and you can vote on those entries, and we really recommend that you do come check them out. You can see right on our homepage, there's a thing that says what the voting period is, and you can come in and you can click any of the cities. You look at the entries. There's an entries tab in each city brief, and basically you come in and you can. All you got to do is put in your name and your email address, so we know you're not a bot, so we know you're actually for real. And then you click on the entries and you vote.
I will definitely have to put this on my calendar. It's something to do. There's so much I think is awesome about that, especially when a company like Shell is willing to take what you guys are doing, which I think is already brilliant, and say, hey, look, you guys have already proven that you can take co-creation. You already have a solid community. Let's point all these people or anybody that wants to get involved towards a particular aim, and I believe that you will wind up with some, like you said, 170 different options, and I believe all of these are going to be very, very nice, very sexy, and very applicable because everybody's going to be doing the research. People will ask questions. They'll offer their own input and say, well, you know, in Sao Paulo, Brazil, you know, one of the major products down there is they run a lot on ethanol, which is a great renewable fuel source if you're going to make a vehicle. So you could design a vehicle that would run around that. You can look at the roads and decide, you know, what's the terrain going to be like? Is it going to require all-wheel drive, you know, or four-wheel drive low or something like that? And really apply all those things, and that is so brilliant. I really dig that. I really dig that. That's really cool. What other projects you guys got going on over there?
Well, so you should take a look. We mentioned the IMTS graphic treatment for that, for the rally fighters that are going to be at the IMTS show, And then the next ones that we have coming up, we've got an open wheel challenge that's out there right now. And this is for all you CAD designers out there, where if you have a wheel that you're passionate about, we'd like you to come and post it. And the ones each month that have the highest rated number of likes on them, they get theirs printed and sent to them in the mail, so that you, it's a nice trophy for having the highest rated one that's there. So that's an open challenge that's out there already. And then we have some pretty exciting ones that are coming up that we have not announced, but typically we try to run at least one competition in each area, design, engineering, fabrication, and CAD specifically. We try to run at least one of those as a competition every month.
Interesting. Oh, you gotta have skills for that, man. Open wheel is definitely no joke. But I'm sure people have gotten quite futuristic with some of their designs.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, that was you know, the sort of thought behind the open wheel challenge was more you know, it was really to kind of like, you know, if Shell is a really like focused, you know, certainly it's entertaining, but you know, it's a very focused, purposeful competition. The open wheel challenge is like, so for all you guys, when you're not, you know, making works that take you 180 hours total or something like that, what do you do, you know, essentially just to kind of blow off some steam with your various disciplines? And for CAD artists, it's like, well, just come up with some really cool, wild wheel styles and put them up there. And then the open side of the challenge is just the fact that, like, once we get all those wheel designs up there, they are on our website and available for download and usage and all this type of thing, so that, you know, designers and you know, the CAD authors as well, when they are ready to do, you know, more serious projects or just other projects that they're doing for fun, now they've all communally come together and made this resource of this wheel stock or this wheel library that they can tap into. And instead of when they're trying to be focused about the car, now they can go in there and grab some rims that do what they want stylistically and get onto the car, instead of getting bogged down in like the details of, well, I've got to start from scratch on these rims and then get to the style of my car to get my idea across. So, you know, we're trying to have a little bit of fun with it, but we're also building this resource at the same time. So,
Interesting.
I'd like to add something to that if I could.
Before.
You know, there's the age of the internet, and user-generated content is out there. Not, of course, everything is not co-creation, but I think the point is that there are websites all over the world you can find out where you can add things. And I think what we've seen, especially in the areas of design, is we've seen some websites that are out there and give you the opportunity to be able to upload work and download work. But there's a big difference between an upload-download site and the idea of a community where you're actually creating things. One of the things we found on upload-download sites is basically that you're incented, if you get credits for uploading more things or other things like that, you're incented to kind of go outside your own creative space and go find other things that other people did and then upload them just so you can get credits. And you might not be saying that it's your own. You might have been saying, oh, I just liked this, so I decided I'll upload it. Nobody's ever going to really find it and check. And the problem is that not only is that wrong, but also that's not co-creation. That's just an upload-download site where people can come.
Right.
And it may drive membership for people to come and use models that are there, but it doesn't drive design capability. It does not drive the same kind of feeling of community. And we're pretty excited about the idea. We were pretty passionate about the idea that when you run an open wheel challenge, you know, if you put up somebody else's work, you're straight up lying, because you're being challenged to put up a wheel that you're saying is better than someone else's that you did. And so that's what creative space is all about in a site like this. It's saying, if I ask you as a challenge to put up a CAD wheel or to put up an industrial design or whatever it is, you're saying it's yours. And or you're saying it's yours and part of a team's that did it. And that's saying that we stand for creating new things. And I think that's a real big difference in this age of upload, download.
I agree. And probably a lot of it, you know, you can attach so much reputation behind it too. Because, I mean, you know, if you get outed as being somebody that's, you know, not putting up, you know, legit material or legit content, you know, that doesn't bode well. I think there's a little bit of community policing as well, and saying, you know, well, that's, you know, that can't be yours because I've seen that over here or X, Y, and Z. And so I think people, you're probably going to wind up attracting a lot of people who take a lot of pride in their work. And because the incentive is more, you know, respect. You know,
yeah.
If you want respect, you're going to put up the things that you create and the things that you're putting together. You're not going to, you know, put up somebody else's work, because the moment you do that and you get shot down, I mean, you're pretty much discredited, and that's not cool. You know, nobody wants that. And people want solid, personal work. And that's what you guys are all about. And, you know, I'd be surprised if you get too many of, you know, charlatans, if you will.
Yeah, you know, it tends to control itself because this is one of the big learnings we had, is everybody said, oh, my God, everybody's going to steal my work and then post it up. But it's exactly the reverse. If you have an open community where everybody shares their work, then basically you find that quickly people get outed. You just said it yourself. Well, it creates a community where you can't do that. And that's the whole point. You cross the river to get to the other side. And, yeah, you might think you'd get wet and you're going to get stuck in the middle. But the truth is we brought a whole community over to the other side to say, hey, if I make this stuff and I post it, I'm actually protecting it more. And that may sound crazy, but it's the truth, because you're putting a timestamp and saying, this was mine. I made it here. And, yeah, somebody could come and say, oh, no, it wasn't yours. I did it. But the truth is that with enough eyeballs, all bugs or problems are shallow. And if you did something, every one of your friends or colleagues are going to know that you did it, and they can defend if somebody else tried to come and rip it off from you.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what discipline it is either. That's the other thing that people sometimes get confused about. I mean, like, so we started out, again, as sort of a design-oriented site. And, you know, the designers started out, you know, timid about the idea. But, you know, again, they found that the more they bought into it, the more they were essentially creating their own defense in the sort of sanctuary of this community. And then when we started to grow, you know, sort of the engineering, fabricator, maker side of things as well, it was the exact same thing. You know, they started out, everybody was playing their hand really close. You know, we had a couple of challenges, and everybody wanted to sort of submit their entries privately to keep it sort of within their own creative space. But then a couple of sort of brave ones among them started putting their work out essentially to be reviewed by their peers, and all of a sudden they started making really, you know, interesting iterations on their own work. And you know, it became very evident that this was a really healthy thing to do. And so now you had, you know, even people creating just very specific, simple CAD files were putting their work out there, because they realized that the road to success was really about tapping your peers and assisting communally so that you could iterate essentially faster than the next guy, rather than, well, I'm just going to, you know, gamble on the fact that no one else is going to come up, have the same inspiration that I did, and they're going to, you know, or at least it's going to take them long enough that I can get this thing out to where it needs to be first, and that's the way, you know, I'm going to have success. No, it's these guys working together so that they can essentially just improve so quickly that they stay ahead of the curve, you know?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I also understand you guys are working on a electric vehicle project, which I'm very, very excited about. I'm a big fan of electric vehicles. I think they have a lot of going power, and I really look forward to seeing some very cool designs. Can you tell us about the project?
Yeah, no, sure. So the EV project is sort of just about to really kick off and get into gear, and it's going to start out with probably more on the industrial design side of things. Not to say that anybody should participate, because again, that's the key behind the whole process. But what we're really aiming to do is to try and, you know, there are some great EVs out there. Certainly, right now, we actually had a Tesla Roadster down at the shop today and went out driving in it. You know, that's a fun, fast car for sure. But I think really what we're trying to do is get back to, like, again, what really creates a passionate driving experience. And instead of trying to teach people or reteach people how to enjoy, you know, a passionate driving experience, it's taking an electric powertrain, realizing its strengths and seeing how those seriously augment, you know, all of the things that we've known and loved in the past, that are sort of, they should be powertrain independent, and then putting that in a really attractive, you know, implementation. So it's this whole idea of, like, you know, people say, oh, yeah, I'm really into EVs and whatnot. Like, that statement should be like saying, oh, I'm a big V8 guy, you know what I mean, as opposed to I'm a really, like, I'm a huge inline four guy, or I'm one of the, you know, rotary cult guys, you know. Like, it's really just, it's all the same language, you know what I mean? And then people will sometimes come up to you and say, like, oh, you know, well, I can't, you know, I need the sound. Like, you know, you can't tell me that an EV is going to, you know, be as attractive as, is ever going to be as attractive as a V12 or something like that with a tuned exhaust. It's like, well, you know, do you think the ICE sounded really awesome when it first came out? You know, like, no, it sounded like a rattle trap. You know, this is just a new power, it's totally just a new power plant. And it's the thing that I think is going to be really exciting about our project is that because of this method of including all of these people who have bring in all these different mindsets of what defines sort of automotive passion, we can really, like, break away this sort of wall of there's ICE and then there's EV, and we can get back to the idea of, like, you know, if I'm going to create a design, a car design, like, say, a sports car design around a V8, like, I'm going to really unleash the potential of that engine in terms of the experience and the excitement it affords. I'm going to design the car way differently than I would if I'm looking at a, you know, inline six twin turbo 2.6 liter or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And similarly, like, so now I've got this EV power plant, and it's like, all right, it's got a just fantastic torque curve. It's super, super tiny. Going from 400 horsepower to 800 horsepower is as simple as sandwiching an 8 by 8 inch diameter cylinder to another one and, like, going forward with that. And by the way, like, instead of dealing with a power plant that is fixed in terms of its envelope, and then a transmission that is fixed in terms of its envelope, and it has to be just so that it can interact with the rear end properly or the transfer case or what have you, like, yeah, batteries are heavy, but, like, existing power plants are heavy, except batteries, you have at least some flexibility to distribute exactly where you want. I mean, look at an RX-7 or an RX-8 or something like that. Those are fantastic cars in terms of handling. And, like, they accomplish this by not just having a nice 50-50 weight distribution like an S14, but they actually have a very small moment because the engine is such a small package, you can put it, put it very close to the center of the car. It's like, now we've got an electric motor which has the same advantages, and yet, oh wait, it also has torque as well, and, like, you know, not just at ground zero, but, like, all the way up through the RPM range.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, it's really all about, like, we've been picking power plants specifically to the task for years now, and this is just yet one more, you know, tool in the box to pick from. So I think this project is really going to see success because people are going to bring in their viewpoints and essentially try and really define, you know, what is this tool specifically used for, just like a V8, just like an inline four, you know, rotary, what have you. So going forward, I think that's going to be the first question on the table is, like, so what's the faith that goes on this solution?
I agree 100%. And electric vehicles for me are, to me, it's you can get really tricky with the battery placement and with the motors and everything else. So
I really
look forward to that particular project, and it's always nice to see how people are trying to innovate and get creative and new technologies and, you know, putting the motors in the hubs and all types of cool stuff. I mean, there's so much sexy out there, and I think they're all going to wind up inside the forge and inside the community, and definitely trying to bring some different aspects to it. I'm really looking forward to it.
make a bold prediction here. I mean, I think that the bold prediction is we've all been thinking about where the greatest cars in the world are going to come from. Are they coming from Korea right now? Or are they coming from the, you know, the people who are coming on strong in China or that kind of stuff? And in a sense, the way we like to talk about it is if it took the British 200 years to come to their manufacturing revolution, and it took the people in the U.S. 50 years, and it took the folks in China 10 years, is it possible that we're going to find another country that's going to come through their manufacturing revolution in 1 year? I think actually what's happening is individuals are going to come through their own manufacturing revolution.
Yeah.
And in cars, what electric does is when you can get these power packs where people basically can plug to either serial or parallel what they do and be able to increase what their performance or decrease their performance and increase their range, effectively, there is developing quickly a paradigm. And the paradigm is you get the Apple-like companies, let's call them the BMWs or the Teslas of the world, where they're out there and they're saying, I make a car top down. I design it. I own everything that goes into it. Maybe the parts are built someplace else, but it's, you know, designed in Cupertino type car. And,
right.
You know, it costs a lot and that's it. Or there's the sort of Dell PC version of it, which is much bigger market where people say, I want my car to have this and this, but not that. And I'm going to learn how to mod it because it's not rocket science anymore. And electric
right.
really makes that possible. And and I see that's how the world is bifurcating in automotive. And we make a bold prediction that the world is going to become a lot more individually manufactured, and electric's going to make that even more possible.
100%.
I mean, do you remember, like, you know, like the first time that you put in, you know, either a standalone EMS or even just like a piggyback system, and like, yeah, you know, like you could go to a shop and get that tuned. And certainly sometimes you do and some people do because, you know, it's good to have the pros too and do it. But, like, you know, there's always that certain sense of pride, like, yeah, maybe my tune isn't quite as good as, like, you know, Wolf or something like that. But, like, that's my tune. And so on some basic level, like, you know, those ignition mats, those fuel mats and whatnot, like, this is so much more my car because I dictated those maps. And with EV powertrains, it's like just blown totally to the next level in terms of how, you know, how much the behavior and personality of your car can reflect your own input into those systems. So.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you what I've been dreaming about for electric vehicles, and it's only been like a personal project of mine, and people are going to call me crazy for it. But really, a nice pickup truck, but really lay down on the floor so you really get good coefficient of drag. It's got really nice, you know, rear wheel covers, and it's just totally laid out, and it just looks really tough. You got the bed perfect for tons of batteries, and a nice solid electric motor, and, you know, this thing could just, you know, silently cruise on down the road, look extremely cool, look the part of the mini truck, but make no noise, and stuff the bad boy in once you get to the store and freak out all the people at Whole Foods.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
You know, hey, that's always been my thing, because I figure you got plenty of space, and, you know, from what I understand, you can mount those electric motors up to manual transmissions, and just by letting off the throttle, if you will, quote-unquote, with the gas, if you really want to get crazy about it. You know,
yeah.
let off the gas and, you know, shift your gear because there's no torque, so there's no need for a clutch.
Yeah.
So
no,
I always
totally.
Thought that was awesome.
And also, I mean, like, you know, again, there's this idea that an electric motor, you know, because I know there are people out there going, ah, you know, what, making no noise? It's like when I roll down, you know, when I cruise down the strip and whatnot, I want people to know and look at me and all this kind of stuff. And, like, the truth of the matter is that, like, electric motors do make noise too. And, you know, for some applications, you know, it's not to say, like, oh, if you go the electric route, you have to submit to silent running. Like, it just is the same as the ICE. It's, you know, we need to figure out how to tune that so it sounds real sweet. You know, and you can have just as much of the curb appeal and the curb notices as you can in you know, even an ICE car, you know, dual side pipes and, you know, banks of four. So
yeah, I totally agree. I know we're running short on time, but there's one more thing I wanted to get out that you guys are working on, was a open source CAD program. I believe you guys talked about that at SEMA. You guys are working with, I believe it was Adobe.
Oh, so this would be, yeah, go ahead.
Alex, why don't you take it? Go ahead.
Okay. Basically, it's actually with Siemens that we're doing this with. And
okay,
Siemens,
sorry, Siemens. Yes,
yeah, no,
sorry, you're right.
No problem. Siemens has a product line that they sell right now, and you know, there are a lot of big OEMs out there using it called Solid Edge. And essentially what we were doing was just, you know, that if you wanted to buy the base level Solid Edge Classic previously, you know, that's a $5,000 piece of software, and that's because it's a top tier, you know, tool that is actually used to, you know, that's used in top level industry to create, you know, the products that you see out there on the street. And obviously, $5,000 is a huge hurdle for most people that may have the skills to use the CAD, or, you know, have the drive to learn it so that they become quite capable in it. But, you know, that's a huge hurdle. So what we worked with Siemens on, Siemens was very receptive to this, was the idea that, like, so even top-level CAD users use about 80% of that $5,000 software at best. And it's just everybody uses a different 80%, say, depending on your focus. So, like, for the maker, to bring this thing down so that, like, it, you know, somebody could use this in their garage or for their small business or something like that, the idea was, well, why should they have to pay for it when they're not using it? And similarly, you know, why should they have to, if they want to just stay up to date with the software every year, they have to pay, you know, a service pack fee that can be, you know, in the area of $1,200, somewhere around in there. So what we did with Siemens was we created a subscription profile for the software, and we worked with them to chop down the available functionality even further than they had already, so that you could really dial in, like, so what is going to be my use case, and what, you know, functionality do I really need? Because, you know, CAD programs, for example, have, you know, the ability to create drawings. They have special tools that make it easier to design in sheet metal or design in tube frames. And, like, some people use that, some people don't. And so now the idea is that, you know, starting at this base level software called Design One and working up through a number of other software packages, you can go in there and, you know, like, well, I'm just about to start making a new fuel rail for, you know, such and such a project. So I'm going to sign up for this subscription, and I know that Design One has all the tools that I need to do this basic machine work design. And so I'll rent it for a month, essentially, or I'll subscribe to it for a month. And for that month, it's my piece of software, and I can use it for my projects, use it to get done the jobs that I need to get done. And then I know that, you know, after that, I'm going to be in the build, and I'm not going to be doing CAD work, so I can unsubscribe for it and wait till the next project comes by to get back into it. So it really is, it instead of having to pay $5,000 up front or else you don't even get to play, now it's this very flexible model. And the only condition on it basically is that, you know, you effectively have to, you know, come onto the Forge, become a member, you know, again, which is free, and just participate and contribute and be, you know, be a player in that community. And if you do that, then again, you get the hurdles taken down, and you can get onto the software and access this you know, base level software or any of the configurations that are totally, they are the same software as the $5,000 piece of software, but just with the functionality tuned in a particular way depending on what your needs are. So that's really what it's about, is trying to enable and put top quality tools in the hands of people who have always been skilled to use it, or have always had the potential to gain the skills to use it, but haven't had the reason to make that huge investment on it. Now they can actually start creating, start participating, and communicating in a really rich way, but not necessarily having to, you know, shell out the bills for something that they're only going to use 20% of, or only use it 20% of the time. So that's really the model.
That's brilliant. I think that's a fantastic idea, and it fits so perfectly. Man, so much awesome. so much awesome. Well, let's wrap this bad boy up here. I think we're gonna have to have you guys back on again in the future to give us some updates on the projects and everything that you guys are doing over there. Where can we go for more details?
So you want to come for more details on local-motors.com, and we're always running a slider at the top of the Forge, which will tell you the biggest projects that are going on right now. And so come on out there. You can sign up for a newsletter where we will reach out to you and let you know on a regular and not ridiculous basis, where you won't be receiving emails from us all the time. Basically, it'll tell you the best stuff that's going on. You can join up at our Facebook page also. You can join up on our Twitter stream. Facebook page is Local Motors or Local Motors - Rally Fighter. And our Twitter stream is at Local Motors. And so those are some of the ways you can find out what's going on. But what we really want you to do is get online, register, vote for the Shell competition entries that are out there right now, 175 of the world's most avant-garde designers. Go vote on what they did. Tell them what they did was great or not, especially if you live in one of those five cities. This is how you get involved.
Yeah. 100%. And also, if you're in the area, you know, please come down and visit in person, because we're always into walking. So.
Okay. Well, that was your question from the chat room was if one of the listeners flew down, would they be able to get a tour and check out the shop?
Definitely.
Okay. Well, Dr. Bruce, you have your answer. There it is. You fly down, they'll give you a tour, and hopefully you'll get a chance to see see a Rally Fighter coming together and take a look at all their awesome tools. Guys, it has been a complete honor to have you on the show. I know we went long, but, it was super important for me to get you guys on the show. And big shout-outs to Ariel and Jenna and everybody else over there at Local Motors. Is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to?
Yeah, we'd like to give a shout-out to our whole community out there. We've got just an amazing group of folks, and we wouldn't be here if it weren't for them. So to all of our winners, to all the future winners in our community, we'd just like to say thank you. And for those people that are dreaming about automotive concepts that they want to make real, come online and check it out, and we've got a lot of surprises for you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. We have Alex Fichter and John Burton Rogers from Local Motors, local-motors.com. Definitely, I really, 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 really need you guys to go do that. It is super important to me for you guys to go check it out, because this whole company, everything that they're doing over there, is super, super, super important to me. Thank you very much for coming on the show, guys. I greatly appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Will. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Talk to you guys later. Everybody, that was John Burton Rogers, Alex Fichter from local-motors.com. Definitely go check it out. Get in the Forge. Check out Rally Fighter. Everything that's going on over there is very, very cool. I'm going to try and be more involved. I'm going to have to try and dedicate at least one day a week where I just poke around over there and put my own two cents in. Everybody, this is MotoYQ Radio. If you are a company or shop or clothing manufacturer, if you're interested in advertising on MotoYQ Radio, you can hit me up, will@motoyq.com. You can check me out on Twitter, MotoYQ Radio. Let's get a conversation going. And definitely, over on the post something in the comment section for this particular episode. Let the people know from Local Motors that you enjoyed the show and you enjoyed the information. And when you get over to the Forge, you know, let everybody know that you heard about the Local Motors from the show. And I greatly appreciate that. And everybody, this has been another episode of MotoIQ Radio. My name is Will.